You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Everyone these days could use a little support, and your friends at the ESO Network are no different. With the ESO Network Patreon, the cool thing is when you help support us, it's you who will benefit. With four tiers starting for as little as 25 cents a week, you can listen to some of your favorite network podcasts early, hear exclusive content, maybe get some ESO swag, or even possibly take a shot at the geek seat. All you need to do is sign up at patreon.com/ESO Network.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 158 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Adventures of the Super Sons number 12, Green Lantern number 9, Justice League number 27, Lois Lane number 1, Superman Up in the Sky number 1, and Swamp Thing season 1 episode 7, Brilliant Disguise. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, coming up first for DC news. The upcoming HBO Max streaming service from Warner Media will not change the DC Universe streaming app service. According to Warner Brothers representative, the company didn't go into any more further detail than that.
I'm still confused about, are they going, it seems like they're going to continue having both, but that can't last. I just don't see that surviving long term.
I know. I fear that too, because from the sounds of it, all the DC shows are going to be on HBO Max. So what's the point of having both unless you want the comics?
It's interesting because they specified that they would be streaming on both, which again, like we said, suggests that they're going to keep both. But I just don't see Warner Brothers is going to end up canceling this service at some point. Like, it just seems inevitable.
Yeah, because I don't think the comics part of it can sustain that separate. I mean, people are going to get HBO Max. Why have the DC Universe app anymore? Unless you're really into the comics, but people who aren't into the comics so much probably won't have it.
Well, and if you're going to make it, if it becomes more of the comics library, which is great. I mean, I love Marvel Unlimited for that reason. It's such a fantastic access to all of those comics. You've got to lower the price. You know what I mean? Like, you can't have the price where it's at, because where it's at is set for it's the only access to both the digital library and all of this DC media. But with HBO Max, assuming you have that, which not everybody will, but assuming you have that, you've already got access to half of the app. So you've got to, there's going to be something. I don't know what they're going to do, but they can't just have them both just exist as is.
I agree with you, and I think it's going to be going away sooner than later. Just afraid that's going to be how it is.
I would love it if they just incorporated it as what if it was just like an add-on to HBO Max? All of the media is already going to be on HBO Max. They haven't specified all of them, but inevitably, all of these, you know, Young Justice, whatever, Doom Patrol, Titans are going to end up on HBO Max anyway. So why not just have, like, what if it was like a $5-$10 add-on to have the DC digital library?
Then that would make perfect sense, wouldn't it?
I mean, I would do that. I would have no problem, you know, like, with just the HBO Max stuff, is just the TV movie stuff, that's fine. And then if you want the digital library, which I personally would, I would pay that little extra thing. But what I wouldn't want is to have both HBO Max and the DC streaming service and have unnecessary overlap.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that. All right, well, let's move on to our next bit of news. Writer Jeff Lemire will pen two new DC Black Label series this fall. The first one's called Joker Killer Smile, and it's with artist Andrea Sorrentio. And then the second one is called The Question, The Death of Vic Sage, with artist Dennis Cohen and Bill Sienkiewicz. I know I butchered all those names, but we if you've been listening to this podcast for a long time, you've known that by now.
I am honestly a little confused by this news. I'm very excited. Both of those sound awesome. But he stepped away from the Terrifics specifically because he wanted to focus on his own creator-owned stuff, which I get. I would want to focus on the stuff I own, too. I mean, is DC, did DC just back up the Brinks truck with money? You know what I mean? Like, what's going on?
I was wondering that, too, because we just, I think, I'm pretty sure we just talked about that last episode. It was either last episode or the episode before, because we were reviewing the last, it was when we reviewed the last Terrifics. You said you had noticed that Lemire wasn't on there anymore, and I didn't even realize he wasn't. And we were surprised by that, and you'd found out that is he wanted to work on his own projects. And then when I saw the DC news for this week, I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Again, like I said, I'm really excited because I like him as a writer, and both of those comics sound really cool. So I'm all in on those. I'm just, did he just need extra cash? And DC was like, yeah, we'll pay it, dude. I don't know. Either way, I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled that's happening. I was just very, very surprised to see that news.
Yeah, I was too, especially after we just talked about it. All right, moving on to other DC news. And this was updated July 11th. Unspecified issues have led DC to once again reschedule Shazam number 7, pushing it back to an August 14th release date. Along with that, the release dates of numbers 8 through 10 have also been pushed back. Shazam number 8 is now set for August 28th, and number 9 is set for September 11th, and number 10 has been pushed back to September 25th. I was surprised to see that.
I mean, one of those is not surprising. The Shazam one, though, that one, I'm a little bit confused why that one would get delayed, because unless it's, I'm starting to think maybe Johns is the issue here.
I was wondering that,
too. He's the common ingredient between those two. Before, we just both assumed it was the artwork, but with Shazam, that can't possibly be the problem.
Yeah, and the other DC news that I have is that Doomsday Clock has now been pushed back too. It's now scheduled to come out August 28th. And Doomsday number 12 has not been solicited for release yet. But we know the hardcover collection is supposed to be coming out November 26th. So I'm beginning to wonder if it's been John's too. And is it because he's got so many projects on his plate he can't get everything done? Is he having health issues?
He took projects off of his plate, though. I thought that was one of the whole things with him stepping down from some of his titles, was that he could focus on other stuff.
I'm wondering, maybe he's having personal issues that haven't been released to the public that's causing these delays, too. Maybe that's why he's had to step back from some things. We honestly don't know what's going on with him.
No, yeah, the Shazam one's the one that really confuses me. Doomsday Clock, I get, you know.
Just because it's been delayed forever.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, it's almost weird when it does come out on time. Shazam, though, it has to be. I can't see how it couldn't be the script, because it's not like there's only been one artist on that title. They have used a couple different, at least unless I'm remembering wrong, I'm pretty sure we've had at least one other artist on that. And it's an ongoing title. It's not a miniseries. It's an ongoing title. So DC has frequently demonstrated its willingness to just throw an artist on it to get it done.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's been a pretty good comic for the most part. A little crowded with story because of all the characters. But other than that, it's been good.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. So, like I said, I'm bummed. I wish these comics would just come out on time.
Yeah, but the weird thing is, it's not like they're pushing the whole schedule back, but they're not pushing it back that far. It looks like we're going to be getting issues like bi-weekly almost. So, who knows, and we'll probably never find out. Alright, well, let's move on to our last bit of DC news. The Flash has released set photos of Killer Frost's new costume. And I think it looks pretty cool myself.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you. I'm excited for this season. Obviously, Killer Frost is going to be taking a bigger role now that Vibe isn't going to be on the team.
So
I'm kind of looking forward to it. I've a lot of the big like set pieces they've done with Killer Frost, like the ice slide stuff, has always been really cool. So I'm definitely cool with seeing her in action more.
I am too. All right, well, that wraps up DC News for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
This week on Myopia Defend Your Childhood. Myopia Defend Your Childhood is so named because I believe we are short-sighted on the things we watched as kids. So every week we watch a movie that one of the panelists grew up watching and see if they hold up, from comedy to cartoons or to action. And for this season, the last Thursday of each month, we're doing a TV show in our Myopia Mornings segments. We watch Saturday morning cartoons and afternoon classics. So find us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. How will you stand when we put your past on trial? Myopia Defend Your Childhood is a member of the ESO Network and produced by Dude Letter Podcasting.
And we're back! But before we get into this week's comic book talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers!
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 We got spoilers!
Spoilers!
For you! We got spoilers!
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 Spoilers.
We've got spoilers,
spoilers
for you. For you.
Let's talk Adventures of the Super Sons number 12. Well, we finally made it to the last issue, Cletus. This issue opens up with Superboy and Robin trapped in the hypercube. They soon discover that this cube is sentient, and kind of tells them the story of how he tried to create his own reality in another galaxy. How he created Rex Luthor and Joker Jr. because he wanted a world where adventure would reign as the law of the land. Honestly, would think the story would have been a little more interesting if we learned about this hypercube being sentient way earlier in the miniseries. What are your thoughts on that?
I cannot think of a more perfect example of a Deus Ex Machina than this. I mean, it's almost to a T. Just out of nowhere, an all-powerful being just comes and solves the story. I was like, what the hell? No hints about this or any. To me, if you ever are like not sure what a Deus Ex Machina looks like in a story, it's this. It's this right here, the sentient cube. Just pulled that completely out of left field.
I know, out of nowhere. I was not expecting it either. I was like, whoa, shouldn't we have this at the beginning of the series?
I agree with you. I think it would have given a lot better context to what we were seeing, because it did, I mean, as very convenient as it was, it did tie the story together pretty well. And I thought gave a lot better context to some of the stuff that was going on, because some of it really didn't make sense until this issue. So in that case, it was good. But like I said, I agree. I agree completely with you. I think had we gotten it sooner, I think it would have made the story a little more interesting.
I think so, too. And, this issue basically wrapped everything up, even bringing back the puppeteer and... explains a lot of stuff that was going on the whole series. And of course, I noticed Tomasi left the miniseries wide open for more adventures, because they ended it with saying it's never the end. Even though that in the mainstream Superboy's been grown up a little bit, he left this open so they could always do Super Sun stories. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Green Lantern number 9. So, Hal Jordan is on vacation. But I couldn't tell if this was some sort of simulation or if he was really in some battle for his life. I mean, I like Grant Morrison stories, but sometimes I just can't tell what the hell's going on with them.
I was pretty confused. I think I got to maybe the end of the comic before I realized it was the actual Hal Jordan and not a different version of Hal Jordan. Like, it took, and it wasn't quite the end, but it was deeper into the comic than it should have been. I thought I was reading some different, like, you know, alternate Green Lantern, then I realized it was just Hal chilling on another planet, and I was like, oh. One thing I thought was really cool, and it makes sense because Grant Morrison wrote this, but it was like one or two podcasts ago, I recommended the one of his Multiversity titles, which dealt with like the old Golden Age Justice Society heroes kind of in a new lens. And one of them in that team was Abin Sur as Green Lantern. And that specific Abin Sur is the sort of antagonist for some of this story. So I thought that was kind of cool that it popped up. And so I'm kind of curious to see where this story goes now.
I'm really interested in it too, because the Abin Sur is from Earth 20, and he's come to recruit Hal Jordan to help in some multiverse Green Lantern corps, which I find really interesting. And also found it interesting that somebody called the Mad Lantern was there to cause problems. Now, have you ever seen this Mad Lantern before? Is that a character that's been around before, or is this new?
I don't know. The thing with Grant Morrison is that he is incredibly knowledgeable and when it comes to comics history and deep cut characters, and so it's always possible when he pulls a character out that it is a previously written character. It's also possible that he's totally making it up. It's the thing. So it's, I don't know, I wouldn't be, because it's him, I wouldn't be shocked if that's a character that has existed before. Otherwise it would have just been like, oh, it's almost certainly a new character. But I honestly don't know.
The other thing I really liked in this issue is we got a glimpse at other Green Lanterns from other Earths. We got a Hal Jordan with a flashlight. We got a Batman Green Lantern. And we got some dude that looked like Shaggy from Scooby-Doo. But I'm really excited about seeing this next issue of the Green Lantern, because I'm interested in this multiverse Green Lantern team. I think it's going to be kind of a fun ride.
Yeah, I totally agree. I love multiverse stories, and Grant Morrison's one of the best at writing them, so very excited.
All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Justice League number 27. So, this issue opens up with Martian Manhunter being experimented on by Lionel Luthor. When we see John get free, we find out that Lionel was actually a robot, and we find out that Professor Ivo and Amazo are behind the ruse, and we see Hawkgirl track down the Martian Manhunter and help him escape. So we see that little bit going on. We also see in the issue, Superman leads Wonder Woman, Batman, Flash, John Stewart, and the World Forger to the home of the Monitors. Or the team finds the Monitor here, and they talk him into joining the Justice League to fight Perpetua, which I thought was pretty cool. And the last part of this issue, we see Shane, the son of Hawkgirl and Martian Manhunter from the future. We see him make friends with Starman, and I have a feeling this is kind of foreshadowing something great that the two of them are going to be accomplishing by the end of the story arc. But, you know, the three storylines they had going on were, I found them all really intriguing.
Agreed. I definitely feel like we're going to end up with all three of the Monitor siblings teaming up, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, that is cool. Especially when we've seen the Monitor and Anti-Monitor at odds in the past.
Yeah. as they do.
So that could make for some interesting interactions as they're teamed up too. But overall, this is a pretty good issue, and I'm really intrigued with where the story's going. I mean, it's interesting, and we're getting a lot of setup, but I think we're going to have a pretty good ending to the story.
I agree. I mean, everything, I've enjoyed this whole thing so far, so it's always possible it would miss the landing, but I agree. I don't think it will.
All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Lois Lane, number one. I got to say, Cletus, I love this issue. And I thought Greg Rucka did a great job of writing it. We get to see Lois Lane being a reporter, and we get to see her life with Superman from her point of view, which I thought was pretty cool.
I agree. I really enjoyed this issue. I wasn't really sure what we were going to get with this comic, but I thought this was a great start.
And it makes perfect sense that she be working with the Question as she tracks down her story. I thought that was pretty cool, too.
Yeah, we've been getting the Question kind of popping up on the peripheral for a couple stories. This one is the other Question, though. Renee Montoya, which makes sense because I'm pretty sure Rucka is the one that did a lot with her, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah, that would make sense, wouldn't it?
I think. I could be wrong about that. I'm pretty sure that he's written the Renee Montoya Question before. So we've kind of got both Questions in play, because the Vic Sage one is the one that's in Leviathan, right?
Right.
Yeah, so that's kind of cool. Kind of curious to see if maybe those two start popping up more.
Yeah. There was two other things about this issue I wanted to talk about. We see Clark ask Lois about her time in space with Jor-El, and we see that she still doesn't want to open up about that yet. So I'm wondering what's going on there. And then, of course, we still see more fallout from the Lois-Superman kiss. And Lois seems less concerned about it, and it's really bothering Clark.
I actually really enjoyed all of that. I liked how much it bothered Clark. But then it also, because you and I remarked the last time it was mentioned, it seemed like almost like this small thing, like, oh yeah, Lois kissed Superman, yeah, whatever. And you and I were both like, I don't think that's a whatever. I think that's kind of a big deal. So I liked that this issue was like, no, yeah, that would not be a small potatoes thing. She's a celebrity in that world.
Yes, she is.
So I actually like that a lot, because it just, I don't know, it felt a lot more realistic. Like, that is the kind of fallout that would happen from something like that, not just small office gossip.
Yeah, for sure. And something tells me we'll be seeing even more repercussions from that in future issues of Superman. All right, well, let's move on to our last title for this week, Superman Up in the Sky number one. So we get Tom King's version of Superman in this one, and I kind of found it very interesting. We see Batman gets Superman involved in a missing child case from Gotham. The foster parents were murdered, and they had four foster children. They were all girls. Two were dead, one shot in critical condition was in the hospital, and then one was missing. And the reason Batman has to get Clark involved is because the missing girl was abducted and taken off the planet. So kind of above Batman's pay grade.
Just a little bit.
We see Clark kind of struggling to whether he should get involved with this case or not. So we kind of see that throughout the comic. We see Clark visit the surviving girl, only to learn that the other foster girl was a big Superman fan, so that played in a factor of him wanting to help in the case. We keep seeing Superman try to make excuses of why he can't go after the girl, but his conscience gets the best of him, and especially after he goes and talks with Paul Kent, which I thought it was kind of cool that Paul was alive in this story. And we keep seeing Batman, you know, kind of updating Superman on the case to keep kind of pushing him forward to, you know, kind of acting as his conscience, trying to get him involved in the case. And then we also got some cool cameos in this story, including Hal Jordan, Wonder Woman, Metallo, Doomsday, a Jor-El hologram, and we even got a dinosaur.
I really liked this comic a lot. I liked it felt like he really kind of got into the essence of Superman, which is that sort of conflict that he is all powerful, so like he should focus on the needs of everyone and the, you know, what's best for everyone, but then also like he can't not help that one person either. Like, he's got to do it, you know. And so I loved that kind of I wouldn't really call it inner conflict. I mean, because you know, ultimately, the whole time, you know that he's going to end up helping that girl because he's Superman.
Exactly.
That's what he's going to do. And then I was fascinated when he goes to Ran and does the Zeta Beam thing. That was really cool. I love that whole sequence.
So, yeah, I'm really interested in the rest of where the story's going.
Yeah, I agree. Now, this I know is coming from the Walmart magazines, right? So was this story already finished?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the story's already finished. I have not been keeping up with the Walmart giants just because it's too expensive to keep up with. All the comics reread and get those.
No, I understand.
So I was happy when they came out with these editions where we could just get these new versions of the story on their own.
Yeah, I agree. Especially, I mean, having read this first issue, it's really good.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's probably some people that have already read the whole story and can tell us how it goes after this. But for me, new to the story, I definitely enjoyed this. And I really am interested to see where it goes because I thought it really, he really got the Superman character. And he also got that sense of Superman being super in different ways. Like when he's able to successfully obtain her location, like that's something only Superman could do. And it was just, I don't know, it was just all those small details really coalesced into a great comic for me.
All right. Well, that wraps up Comic Books Talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk Swamp Thing.
Hello, America. You like listening to knowledgeable people who are passionate about what they do? Wilbur does, don't you, Wilbur? But what about Daisy? She likes to listen to shows about pop culture, movies, television, and comic books. Good thing Wilbur and Daisy found the Nerd Bliss Podcast. You, too, can find the Nerd Bliss Podcast at nerdblisspodcast.com and on the ESO Network. Just remember, Nerd Bliss is one word.
And we're back. Let's talk Swamp Thing, Season 1, Episode 7, Brilliant Disguise. Well, this episode did a great job of showing Swamp Thing's abilities. We got to see him growing fruit, summoning plants from the other side of the world, and even using the flora in Abby's body to combat the rot infection. One of the best uses of his abilities was introducing the hallucinogenic spores so that Alec could appear human. I thought that was pretty cool. And of course, this was an added benefit to also providing a low budget way to have Swamp Thing interact on screen without Abby and without all that costuming and makeup.
Yeah. And also, you know, again, giving a reason for that actor to join the show.
Yes.
Because otherwise he effectively would have been in a single episode. That's got to be the worst, like landing the lead role, really, but then not
not being in the show.
Yeah, that would be tough. That's a tough break.
So we got the introduction of the rot by Swamp Thing, and he not only told us about how bad it was, he actually showed us. I like how they did that. We see Alec taking Abby and showing her the lushness of the swamp. I thought that was cool. And then we get to the decaying part of the swamp, and Alec keeps warning Abby that she is going to be endangered, but she's hell-bent on trying to get a sample. And then we see the rot attack Abby, and I just thought it was a great way to show us how bad the rot was besides just telling us about it.
I agree completely. One thing I enjoyed during this whole thing, in addition to that, seeing the contrast between the green and the rot, was seeing Alec developing his powers more, and developing his understanding of his powers more. We see him summon a fruit tree. Obviously, he created that pollen or whatever it was that caused the hallucination in the first place. He helps drive the rot out of Abby. All of those things. It was just really cool. We're starting to see Swamp Thing kind of get his feet underneath him in terms of his powers. The only downside to that is, again, it's ultimately not going to lead to a whole lot because this is all we're getting for this show.
I know. And the thing is, we're on episode number 7, and we're just now getting a taste of his powers because they really haven't focused on him too much. I mean, Swamp Thing in general hasn't been a main character himself. He's pretty much been in the background. But I've loved how they've done it, though. They haven't overdone Swamp Thing. Because I think trying to do things from Swamp Thing's point of view, it wouldn't have been as good for the show, I don't think. I think we would have found it more boring. And going more with Abby's perspective, you know, her being more of the main character and us following her actions instead of swallowing Swamp Thing's actions, I think was really good story-wise for the show.
I agree with you. I agree. And that's the sort of the frustrating thing is I don't think that the pacing for this show is off. I think it's right on track for what, like, the development of Swamp Thing's powers, I think, has been a very good progression for the show. They've not rushed it, but it doesn't feel like they're dragging either. The only frustrating part is that we know it's not getting anything after episode 10, but that's not the show's fault. And that's so it's hard to... You can't criticize the show because I think they're doing it exactly right. You're just not going to get any more of it.
I know. And after watching it, I'm like, I can't believe they canceled it as good as it is.
The only hope, and it seems highly doubtful, the only hope is that all of the positive buzz that comes from the show will change somebody's mind. But it seems unlikely at best.
Yeah. One thing I was not expecting from this episode was Maria getting into Avery's business, going behind his back, and having her own dealings with Dr. Woodrue and setting up the deal with Nelson. This had a whole new twist on that character for me. And her deal with Lucille to have Avery killed, I was like, dang, I wasn't expecting her to be kind of villainous like that. I thought they were really going out to try and kill Alec, but that double cross, I was surprised by that. Then, of course, we find out Nathan is Avery's son. That was another twist I wasn't expecting.
Okay, can we talk about that for a second?
Yeah.
Because plot-wise, it makes perfect sense that he would be his son. Perfect sense. Actor-wise, though, two white people gave birth to a black person? That's my only question. I'm just like I said, plot wise, perfect sense. There's no plot hole there at all. It totally makes sense that he would actually be his son. But when they said that, I was like, I don't know if you noticed the actors that you have playing these characters.
Hey, it's just recessive genes.
Yeah. It just cracked me up. It really didn't bother me at all because, like I said, from a story perspective, it absolutely made sense. And so I was like, okay, that doesn't – okay.
You know, at this point, I don't really care.
No. It didn't really bother me. I laughed when he said that. I literally laughed because I was like, that's got to be a joke. And then when the show was like, no, that he really is his son, I was like, okay.
Anybody taking a paternity test?
Yeah, I was like, all right. We're going to go with that. Yeah, I enjoyed the twist with Avery getting taken down by his wife. It was cool. It also made sense because we had that. Obviously, we've had a lot of foreshadowing in terms of her darker side, but we also had that scene where she's in the hospital and she's sort of glaring at him through the window of her room. So they kind of laid a little bit of the groundwork for that. And then they were very ominous with her knife at the beginning of the episode. I thought for sure that was going to come into play more, which I guess in a sense it did. But
yeah, that was definitely foreshadowing. Now, to me, it looks like Avery's going to end up as the avatar of the rot. Is that what feeling you're getting?
Yes. I would agree with that. That definitely, especially at the end of the episode, that's definitely the feeling I got. I still think he's going to... I don't think he's supposed to be arcane, though. It's the only thing. I still think that the show was probably intending to have him appear at some point in the future.
Do you think maybe they switched up the ending when they found out they're only going to get 10 episodes instead of 13?
I don't think so. My guess is there may have been a few more like side detour episodes, you know what I mean, that like loosely moved the plot forward but really kind of did kind of like its own little mini story. We really haven't had many of those so far, if like maybe one. I think we would have seen more of those. I think that the other three would have been, you know, adding more to the story for sure, but maybe a little less focused on the main plot.
Yeah.
I think I could be wrong. I think what they probably just ended up basically trimming the fat, like all of the extra stuff that didn't directly move the plot forward, they just got rid of, which isn't, I mean, I would have loved more episodes, but it isn't the worst thing, because this has been a very tightly focused story in terms of it telling its plot.
Yeah, it has been. We've only got three episodes left, so we're getting down to the nitty gritty.
One other random observation I wanted to mention, not related to anything, but I couldn't help but noticing it, I don't know how I didn't notice it in other episodes, but the dude that plays Dr. Woodrow is a giant compared to some of his castmates. I looked it up. He's 6'6". There's this scene. There was a couple scenes. The one where, I can't think what the wife's name is, but she goes to visit him, and she is, you can tell she is moving her head to look up. He is so much, and it looked like he had to like almost duck under the doorway. These are super small things, but I noticed that, and I was like, how tall is that guy? And then there was a scene towards the end when he and his wife have returned from the dinner, and we see how bad her dementia is getting. I thought she was sitting down. She's standing up. She's at like his chest level. She is standing up, because at first I thought she was sitting down and he was like helping her with his dress, and then she moved and the height did not change. Again, like I said, really dumb small observation, but I was like, holy crap, that dude is so much taller than his castmates.
That's funny. All right, well, that wraps up our episode for this week. Do you have any shout-outs, Cletus?
Yeah, so on the DC Universe app, I don't know how recently they added it, but I noticed they added Watchmen. They also added something I had never seen before, because I know, so when they made Watchmen, Zack Snyder just went crazy with it, and, you know, his director's cut is very long. They also did, like, an animated version of the comic that the kid is reading throughout the Watchmen comic. Tales of the Black Freighter, I think is what it's called. They also, I didn't know this existed, but it's on the DC Universe app, so I watched it, and it was pretty cool. They did a mockumentary called Watchmen Under the Hood, and it's like a mockumentary about a guy interviewing the older Night Owl and kind of going through the history of the older, like, 1950s team.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
It's really cool, yeah. They clearly, all this was clearly filmed all during the same time, you know, because it's the same actors and all that. It was, I liked it. I thought it was really cool. And again, I like, it's crazy. Like, Zack Snyder really went all in on adapting every single piece of that comic that he could.
I'll have to go check that out. I knew Watchmen had popped up on there, but I didn't know about the other one, so I'll have to check that out. All right,
restate. So that was called Watchmen Under the Hood.
All right, and for my shout out, I'm going to shout out about Stargate SG-1, because I've been rewatching the series, and I'm finally on season 7, which is one of my favorite seasons, where they're searching for the lost city of Atlantis, and very, very excited about rewatching the series. I've watched it several times. But way a long time ago, on Earth Station 1, episode 115, I was on there with Bobby Nash and some other guests talking about Stargate SG-1. That was back in 2012. That's how long ago this was. Oh, man. I had forgotten all about that till I saw something about it pop up on Facebook the other day. Oh, man. So, just wanted to give out a shout-out about that. All right. If you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach us at our feedback line at 317-564-7000. 9133, leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, coming up next week, Cletus, we've got a lot of comics coming up. We got Batman, Catwoman, Detective Comics, Justice League Odyssey, Naomi, Supergirl, Superman, Wonder Twins, Wonder Woman, Young Justice, a lot of comics. And, of course, Swamp Thing, Episode 8. We're going to bypass DC News on the next episode because the episode after that, we're going to talk news from San Diego Comic-Con. And we don't have hardly any comics coming out. I think we have, like, maybe 4 comics that week. So it'll be perfect to talk about all that news. All right. Thanks for joining us. And we'll see you next time.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.